Welcome back to Shredder's Not Dead. If they make you bang your head, we'll talk with them or about them. And today I'm very lucky to be joined by, well, it feels wrong to pick favourites really, but my favourite guitarist, Fredrik Åkesson of the mighty, mighty Opeth. How are you today?
Oh, thank you for that introduction. I'm good. It's morning here. I've just been recording some stuff and a bit of morning shred. So
Yeah,
it's a
very
good
good.
start of the day, the best start of the day.
Yeah, nice.
Coffee
Got to
and a
get
bit
your
of
exercise
shred.
in. What have you been shredding on at the moment?
I'm working on some like a guitar album, so I've been recording some harmonies this morning actually. So on this song I'm about to finish. So, see what happens with that.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Well, I'll get straight into the Opeth stuff because I think that's what people want to hear about. And I would
Definitely.
love to chat forever, but we don't have that. So very exciting to hear Opeth coming back. It's been a fair while. It's been a while between albums as well. We're looking at a couple of shows out in November. I suppose everyone's
Yeah.
pretty excited for that.
Definitely. It's been a while, and first time we're coming to back to Australia. And New Zealand for what's it say, five shows in Australia, I believe, or six
Yep.
maybe. So we're doing two in, yeah, because we're doing two in Sydney, I believe, which is unbelievable, doing the Opera House again, but two days in a row. And our first time with our new drummer Valtteri as well, so it's gonna be fun to introduce him for you guys, you know.
Yeah, very much so. That'll be fantastic. And two nights at the Opera House. How'd you swing that?
I don't know. I guess we have to change a couple of songs up, or it's kind of difficult. You never know if it's going to be some of the same fans, but I reckon it's going to be different people attending to the show. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We, of course, the focus is going to be on the new album. And so we haven't really decided the set list yet. We're preparing right now, or we're going to prepare soon, right after Christmas. We have a bit of a break. Of rehearsing and stuff like that, but we're gonna focus on this new set list after Christmas, basically.
Yeah, very nice. So I'm personally still recovering from the Deliverance Damnation double set you did at the Opera House. Oh, gee, coming up on
Oh,
5 years ago
yeah.
now.
Oh, were you there?
I was very lucky to be there. Yep.
So where are you based? It looks like, is it Brisbane or?
No, this is Melbourne at the moment. I think
Melbourne.
when we last had a chat a while ago now, I was based out of Brisbane.
Okay, cool.
Here, there, and everywhere. Yeah, we'll see. I've always loved seeing Opeth live, so I'm sure I'll grab a couple of the shows. I've currently got a ticket to the Opera House, so that's I'm very excited for that.
Cool. Now we feel strong. We did a 3 week tour recently in America, North America. And we had a really good vibe, and the crowds were great. And it feels like we stepped up the game as far as production. And I think we've never been as tight as a unit as we are now, actually. So it feels, I feel like we're pretty strong right now, which is great.
Yeah, good to hear that. And one of the things I was going to talk once we got on the topic of music a little bit more was talking. You mentioned Valtteri is joining the band, and obviously, heavy metal is very percussion driven. So how are you clicking with him, and how are you finding what he's bringing to the band so far?
Well, it's been great. I mean, he's done, what is it, three or four tours now with us. So that was great to do a bit of touring before we went into the studio working on the new album. But he's a very ambitious guy, and it's easy to get along with. It's really no problems at all, by any kinds. So it's been a very smooth ride, and of course the new album is very challenging for a drummer and or guitarist as well, I would say. The way Michael writes his riff is always tricky to get around and get into your DNA, because he has his kind of odd way of writing more polyrhythmical stuff. You could say the drums are so complicated and polyrhythmic, even though the beat is straight. It's they kind of fool you as a guitarist when you want to play the riff there, but you have to find the way to cope with it and get it into your muscle memory, which for me at least, that's what it's about. Before you go into the studio, I have to have the riffs and all the parts in my muscle memory, so I don't have to think being in the studio. Get more focus on tone and Not thinking when you're playing. It's a good goal for me at least.
Yeah, understood. You don't want to be rehearsing as you're trying to get it down to record. You want to be just doing, so to speak. So
Yeah.
that's yeah.
That's the
On
good
that.
start.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd had a little bit of I knew a little bit about Walter, who brought to the table with Paradise Lost. I was a really big fan of the Obsidian album, and I got to say, when some of the tracks off that, like Darker Thoughts and Ghosts, I think were the two big singles, and they're so different. I was thinking, oh, I wonder if we're going to get a Doom Opeth album. You're going to turn the BPM right down and go a bit gothic with it. But it's actually this is a very, very different album to anything Opeth had put out before. I believe, and I did want to go on a little bit of a spiel that people sort of break Opeth up a little bit into, new and old, and there's a whole bunch of debates and all the fan forums and all that stuff that goes on, and that's fine, that's whatever. But I do think it's really interesting hearing what you've brought to the table as a rhythm guitarist versus what Peter was doing pre that. I think that's a bigger difference, and it's really exciting to me as a fan to hear some of the stuff on Watershed sort of get elaborated on and moved back towards, but in a different way. So, from your point of view as a guitarist, what were the sorts of inspirations and feelings you were bringing into this record in terms of going somewhere heavy again, but somewhere definitely new for the band?
Yeah, I think you summed it up quite well. I think it's kind of a mix of the old Opeth and the more one of you maybe want to call it prog hard rock era for the past four albums. But still, to me, it's a step forward, definitely. The song arrangement are different. They're more action packed, the songs. It's a bit more compressed, action packed, and a bit more restless. You never get, to me at least, you never get bored listening to this album. Previous songs, you certain section would have been dwelled upon longer, and that is kind of gone a little bit on this album. But you still have the, what I kind of refer to, the yin and yang with Opeth music. You have the more calmer, melancholic parts meets the more aggressive parts. That has been with the band since Orchid. But I do think this album is very important for us, that we're doing something different but still connecting the past. And for me personally, I was jamming a lot with Walter before we went into the studio. We did about 20 rehearsals, just drums and guitar, which was great practice for me, as we talked about it earlier, getting the stuff into your DNA. And then we rehearsed the entire band, which was very important, but we only done for this album and Incauda. And but with the solos, I did all these on the previous album. Improvised them with Michael, and on this time around, I was did all of them on my own. Just paying more afterthought to the leads, trying to step up the game, and of course, doing something that suits the song. And for me, I wanted every solo to be different from one in each other, like and trying to reach new levels. Exploring new stuff. We did some touring with Voivod. They opened up for us when we did their anniversary shows, and I was kind of inspired by their dissonance stuff. I want to do more freaky stuff, but not on every track, but particularly in Paragraph 7, there's some almost a bit like Alan Holdsworth in Legato stuff, but with some kind of evil dissonance in it. I wanted to kind of explore that space a bit more. Stuff like that, but it was a fun album to do, and we're really proud of it and happy about it. And we hope the people that are interested in us will feel the same, you know. But it really passed our filter with a both thumbs up, and
Yeah.
that's basically all you can do, you know. Then you just gotta wait and see how it's gonna be received. But so far, so good.
Yeah, well, that's it. And speaking of stepping up your game, what was it like as a feeling to hear the end of Paragraph 4 when it was done and go solo for solo with Ian Anderson of all people? That must have been a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, I had to pinch my arm a few times after that. Really,
Yeah.
that was the weird thing was that I did the solo before I knew he's going to play a flute solo on that song. And initially, he wasn't supposed to play flute on the album, but he did the narrations, which was really brought depth to the concept and everything. But then Ian actually asked Michael, "Do you guys want some flute on the album?" And what do you answer? Yes, thank you. But we really didn't have a section. But that section he played, that solo on Paragraph 4, really suited a flute solo. So we were lucky about that. And maybe I would have played it differently if I knew he was going to play before. But I think I'm happy with the solo on that song, anyways. It's it's a blessing and an honor, great honor to have him on the album. He went to see him a few weeks ago in Stockholm, and his improvisations with the flute solos he does is just mind blowing. He's such a, of course, a super musical person.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about on this album in particular was guitar tone. And when I think about heavy music, I mean, one of the really popular sounds, particularly in the US at the moment, is taking that HM2 Swedish chainsaw sound. You've got Gatecreeper and Nails and End and all those guys doing that. But I also think there's not many songs out there heavier than Jethro Tull's My God off the Aqualung record.
Oh, that's heavy.
And oh, isn't it? But bringing it back to The Last Will and Testament, I think Paragraph 4 in particular has that really heavy, a very similar energy in terms of, am I right in saying it sounds like a single coil of some sort with just enough distortion to start really breaking up. And it's got it's not a modern prog sound, and it's certainly not a Swedish chainsaw HM2 driven sound, but what went into crafting that tone and that atmosphere? Because I honestly think you really, really nailed it on this one. It's such a beautiful guitar sound.
Oh, thanks. That's kind of my department in the band. Michael trusts me to. I have a collection of amps and stuff like that, but I won't bore you with that too much. Maybe we don't have time.
That won't be me, you bore.
I'll try to sum it up. But what we used, Michael had an idea, since it's such a lot of layers of other stuff on the album. You have strings, you have these Mellotron keyboards, and it's so important that everything fits in the audio frame. And a trick doing that, and you're right, I used a Stratocaster. Actually, I can show it to you.
Yeah, please do. I'd love to.
So I was using this one from 1970.
Nice.
It has an FS1 pickup in it. So I used that one for all the rhythms, and Michael, he used a Tele. And those two, I mean, this pickup is slightly more, it's not a regular single coil. There you go. It's in
Oh,
like an
yeah.
FSR, so it's blurry. Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Yep.
I also used it
Beautiful.
for a few leads, like on Paragraph 5 and the last track, the ballad solo. Anyhow, so the idea was to use single coil kind of sound, but this one is slightly more beefed up because you have an FS1 and it's stacked. But amp wise, we used a Friedman BE100, which is like a Marshall goes to 12, and we used a thing called the brown box. So you plug that into the socket, and you can adjust the voltage. Because what's the voltage in Australia? Is it 240 or is it 110?
We use 240 over here, yeah.
Yeah, same as here. So we recorded in the UK, same thing there. But this one, you plug it into the wall, and you plug the amp into this box. And I brought it because I brought a Plexi, Marshall Plexi from 1972 that I used for all the solos, combined with the OD1 Boss, the yellow one with two knobs. That's from 1978, the first one, which has a 14-pin chip or 12-pin. I can't remember. It's super nerdy, but it does make a difference. And then we figured, using a modern amp, which is built for 240, the old Plex is built for 220, so you lower the voltage, which will prevent for breaking the tubes. But we found out it worked really cool to lower the voltage in an amp designed for 240. So I took down the voltage to 200 volts using a modern amp, so to speaking, with a Friedman. And something happened with the tone, like the brightness on the top. Some of the uglier frequencies, if you call it that, they disappeared, and more punch and more warmth. And they were kind of Laughing about me. That's super nerdy. Why did you bring that box? But then we're in the under the loop in the studio. Both Michael and technician were like, "Well, yeah, it does make a difference, you know." I told you. So that was like a trick we did. Otherwise, just to cut through these layers, as I mentioned, I think using the single coil and Michael had his telly, that really made that tone come out, you know. So that's basically the concept. We didn't use the distortion box in front of it, but for the leads, I did, as I mentioned, with the plexi. So that's basically it. And it's equivalent to what Eddie Van Halen did back in the day, because in America they have 110 volts and he lowered it to 90 volts. And 240 going to 200, it's pretty much the same thing, really. So it's nothing new under the sun. I mean, I know AC/DC, they use this box live, for instance, to trim. It's also great for preventing damage of your gear.
That's really interesting. And have you been on the Kemper kick? I know everyone has been having a go on those sorts of things. And I mean, I'm on the fence. I think there's some great sounding bands that use that kind of amp modeling stuff at the moment, but I am really grateful for the bands that are still not doing that. I think even if it's placebo, I think having amps is better. But yeah, what do you make of that sort of stuff?
I mean, I understand convenience, and sometimes you traveling around touring cost a fortune going with real amps, but we're still stubborn using the tubes. We had the digital solutions for a while, and I remember I borrowed an amp. Actually, it was in Brisbane, the show. We used to put it in the return of tube amps, and this amp blew up, and 20 minutes of the gig was destroyed. And that's something I don't want to experience, not the audience either. So we recently, or a few years back, we started using the Synergy rigs, if you know what that is. Synergy, which is all tube, but you can have it in the rack. So I have a 100-watt power amp, stereo, if you like, with 6 L6 tubes in it, and then you have like a mothership Synergy that fits two slots of preamps. Now the preamps are made from the actual amp manufacturers, so you could have a PV or a Soldano. Me and Michael, we're using the Fryette for clean. Fret Deliverance preamp for clean and crunch tones, and for the heavy rhythm and lead tone, they're all two channel preamps. We used the SLO2, Soldano 2, the latest model. And that stuff been so reliable and great. So then we know that our guitar tone's going to be the same every night. When we do fly gigs like going to Australia or Japan, we have to rent in the cabinets, of course. We can't put those on the plane, but. But this is very, has been very reliable. Fingers crossed.
Well, as you say, I mean, we want to hear you play music, and it's a hell of a long way to come over here to do it. So,
I
there's
mean, we always have a
no.
backup. If you're talking about live, we always have a rental Marshall and a simpler setup on the side if anything would go wrong. We recently built new Synergy rigs, so we have double of everything. So double Syn 2s with the preamps and double power amps. So we can just switch a couple of cables and then everything will be good. But we have this system in a fly rig as well. So there's a lot of guitar nerdery and figuring out rigs, and that's kind of my department also.
Well, off the topic of guitars for now, what have you been listening to lately? Are there any new bands that are coming through, taking your ear, or any discovered any old th bands that you might have not paid much attention to in the past?
Yeah, a bit of both actually. We were recently touring in America and I stumbled on Blood Incantation, this band. And I really liked them. They came to our show and we hanged out a little bit. And they gave me their vinyl record. And I think it's really cool. They have a keyboard player from Tangerine Dream playing some spacey stuff. And it's like they said they wouldn't have exist if they hadn't listened to Opeth. So that was, you know, overwhelming to hear, but they really don't sound like old. But anyhow, cool band, new stuff, you know. Otherwise, I was into a prog album Michael recommended because He's a great music collector, and it's good to pick up advice from him sometimes, since I mainly listen to the old metal stuff. But Culpepper's Orchard, an album, which I've found really, really good, you know. So, but usually when I'm back home having a couple of beers with friends, it's the old metal stuff going on.
Yep. Yeah, very good. Speaking of
I was listening to
podcasts,
like a shrapnel, yeah, Vinnie Moore first instrumental album, Mind's Eye, the other
Yeah,
day.
okay.
Still good. It's like fucking proper shred.
Yeah, gotcha. All right, I'll be sure to give that a listen. I'd love to hear yourself and Michael have a podcast where you just, once a week, once a month, whatever it is. Here's an album, doesn't matter what it is, just I find there's a lot of bands that stay very in their lane, but I always hear in interviews with particularly with Michael, I think being such a prog nerd that he is, said with love,
Yeah.
the stuff he comes out with, Yeah. But anyway, yeah,
Yeah, I
very
think it's
good.
important for him the way he writes music to listen to a lot of different stuff, you know. I think he probably finds a lot of inspiration digging these obscure albums that not a lot of people heard about. And there's so much stuff out there, so yeah. It's
Yeah.
inspiring.
Yeah, you could listen to music forever and barely scratch the surface. I think that's the overwhelming thing about it, isn't it? But
Oh yeah. Recently, I was playing at this guitar event, guitar and bass, a music fair in Germany, and it was some great players there. Mattia Macaluso, the guy from Italy, plays with the fingers, but it sounds like Paul Gilbert on steroids. And Greg Koch, I was honored to be up jamming with him, and Phil X was there. And guitarist called Andy Wood, which is more like a. I think he's a Nashville cat, but he also into shred. So it's fun with the guitar community. There's a lot of stuff happening there, and it's cool to be on these music fairs sometimes and get inspired, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting seeing some of these, particularly with, I don't want to get too into the discussing social media because I think it goes to a very unhelpful place very quickly. But with things like TikTok and Instagram and that, the way that guitar has almost, for some people, become like a sport. And I think that's really cool. It innovates. On the better end of things, you get bands like Polyphia doing some really interesting ways of making noise with a guitar. No, I mean
Yeah.
that as a full compliment to them. I think they're really incredible, but it's yeah, do you any sort of thoughts on that? The way that guitar playing has
Yeah.
changed over the course of the last few decades or so?
I kind of realized I'm a bit of an old school guy, but I kind of realized that because I was invited to at John Petrucci's Guitar Universe in Florida last summer. And Polyphia was there, and Tosin Abasin, and all these. I've heard about those, but there are a couple of other guys, Pliny from Australia was there as well.
Yep.
Great guy, you know. So it's interesting. It's like a new community coming up, and YouTube and social media has a lot to do with it because they're really active. I think I put up one reel on my Instagram so far when we did the tour, but I might do a bit more. I've been thinking about it. It seems to be appreciated, but. Some to a certain point, I like to get inspiration from my own. I can't be. Sometimes I go on YouTube and explore licks, and you know, wow, that's amazing. I have to learn that, and it's of course a very useful tool if you're a young guitarist compared to when I was a kid. I had to sit with a tape cassette with slowing it down and trying to figure stuff out, which was probably good ear training, you know. Now it's easier to you can slow it down on YouTube. You can use that wheel, you know. And the tools are making it easier, which could, of course, lead to development quicker when it comes to techniques and l learning stuff.
Yeah,
So I don't
for
know.
sure.
I think you should focus on a bit of both, not only the YouTube stuff. Try to just play without watching a screen as well, you know. Like
Yeah.
get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, and just see what comes out there. Put on some music and improvise to it.
Yeah, that's it.
Combination would probably be healthy.
Exactly. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to chat to you, Frederick.
My pleasure, totally.